Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eagle Marathon coming up in November, the Challenge Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $65 million to keep people in the game of life and sport. And you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. Being Independence Day weekend, we have three special guests in studio who obviously understand a little bit about what it means to have a little bit of independence in their lives. We'll start out across from me, Rudy Garcia Tolson.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Happy 4th of July to everyone out there, and hope everyone's having a safe, enjoyable holiday.
Rudy is a double above knee amputee who we first met when he was like 6, 7, 8 years old, and has gone on to win 2 Paralympic gold medals at 200 IM. He's won a Paralympic silver medal at 200 IM. And, Rudy, I think the goal for 2016, make your 4th Paralympic team in swimming, and also...
We're getting gold in Rio, but I'm hoping to qualify for swimming and track and field and bring home 2 medals and 1 games for both sports.
So you're in track and field, you're talking...
I'll be doing a long jump on the track.
And how far have you jumped?
Right now, in practice, I'm about 6'5", which is about, in between about 20 feet-ish in that area.
20 feet?
Yeah, yeah. So not too shabby. I can. The white man has a little bit of hops. Not too bad. And then I also run the 200 meter, which I'm hoping to, get in there. That's kind of my bonus event on the track. But, yeah, feeling good about that.
Love that. And next to Rudy, we have Mr. Roderick Sewell, who's going for the Paralympics at 100 meter breaststroke.
Yes, sir.
All right. And Roderick... So take us back a little bit. You were double above knee amputee, mm-hmm. And how old were you when you lost your legs?
I was a year and a half when I had my legs amputated.
And your mom worked for the Navy?
She worked as a citizenship for the Navy, yeah. She worked full-time. I was making decent money,
yeah,
but not making enough money to afford prosthetics for me.
Yes.
So she got help from the state. The only way they would help her is if she wasn't making basically any money.
So basically, she had to quit her job and become homeless and move into St. Vincent de Paul for her to get the support that you needed as a young man who needed prosthetic legs.
Exactly, yeah. And it's probably the best thing she could have did for me.
You know? Wow. But that's pretty selfless to be able to do that for her son and move. How was that living in St. Vincent de Paul?
I mean, growing up as a kid, it was definitely hard.
Yeah.
But my mom and my family definitely kept my spirits up. At the time I met Rudy, who was the first other double above knee amputee I ever met, or person with a disability that I ever met. So it helped get my hopes up more and get me introduced to sports, which helped better my living now.
Right.
So it all, it was a rough lifestyle, but it all turned out for the best.
And through that, at the beginning, I remember you were scared of the water, right? I mean, petrified, right, Rudy? I mean,
he couldn't get in the kid pool.
He couldn't put his face in the water, right?
No, it was pretty bad.
No. So when he first got in the water and you first took, I remember you had him at La Jolla Cove at our San Diego Triathlon Challenge.
Yep.
He basically had to go on your back.
Yeah, it was choking me. I couldn't breathe. I mean, he was just holding on so tight, holding on for life.
But, yeah,
it just shows how far he's came, though. I mean, now he's getting ready to go the Pan American Games, and then hopefully Rio, right?
Yeah, Rio. So. I know they all blend together when you've got Athens, Beijing, London.
Show.
Yeah, the next one. So, Roderick, talk a little bit more about finding Rudy, finding a mentor, and also how important sport was for you.
Like I said, at the time, we weren't living very well, and it was just my will and my hope was kind of down.
Right.
I didn't think I could do anything or was meant to do anything. So when I met Rudy and got involved with Challenge Athletes Foundation, it opened my eyes. I started getting into everything. I started hand cycling. Started snow skiing, everything. I started track a little bit. Swimming was the last thing because I was afraid of the water for a little bit. But, it changed the way I saw life. As the years went by, I got more confident. I became more of a strong being, I think.
Right.
And, it was overall, it was the best thing that could happen to me.
You know, I remember when we first met, it was like two brothers that just met for
separated
the first time.
Birth.
Yeah, but I mean, it was just, you know, it's like we both had this kind of, we both knew that, you know, we kind of understood what it was like to live with no legs. And we had, you know, as a young child, you know, you always have people, you know, staring at you and making fun of you. And so, you know, it was just like right away when we walk out in public and people would stare, you know, we both give each other the look like, this is what it's like, but
it's hard to go incognito because you guys, what your challenge is pretty visible.
Yeah, when we wear shorts all the time too. Oh, so
right.
You know, it's an invite to come ask questions.
Well, you know, back in the era, back before that, guys would and gals would cover it up, right? It would be like, okay, I'm not going to show my legs.
But we were actually just talking about that with many amputees still do that to this day, and you know, we always wonder why, because you know, we love having our legs showing. We love to educate people about our legs, and you know, we embrace it. So
right. And our third member.
There we go.
Mr. Blake Leeper. We're talking, Blake is a double baloney. And what do we call that double baloney,
yeah,
Rudy?
Yeah, yeah. We call that little paper cut.
Whatever. Paper cut. Baloney.
Real
knees. We call that jealous. Cause <that's>
And so Blake has recently, just last weekend, the weekend before, 47.9 at the Track and Field National Championships, and broke the American record, took a bronze at 200, a silver at 400 in London.
Yes.
And Blake, people see you running now. They see you in the NBA All-Star Game, in the celebrity deal. Yes. And you hit a three-pointer.
Yes, I did hit a three. Yeah, I did hit a three, Bob.
Not too
bad. Three assists and three steals.
Did you dominate Kevin Hart?
I do. I'm always like 5 inches taller than him.
He's like nothing, right?
Off, so he was nothing.
He should have got the MVP.
He should have given it to me. But it's all good.
I think they have to give it to him to allow him to be. Because he's not going to come if he doesn't. But growing up, what people don't realize a lot of times, you came from a little city in Tennessee,
Very small town.
And so many times our athletes are from a small town and they aren't really aware of what's out there.
Yes.
So you grew up, basically, you had your legs amputated. How old?
I was 9 months. I had my first
amputation. So your reality was, I've got prosthetic legs, I'm playing basketball, I'm playing baseball. You played on a varsity team.
Yeah, varsity basketball, varsity baseball, catcher, point guard, second base. And I was just, my main goal was just to keep up with my best friends.
Right.
I've even had best friends to this day that I grew up with and played basketball that made it to the NFL, MLB. And at the time, as a young kid, I didn't understand how important that was for me to keep up with these MLBers and NFL. And now we grow up, and I'm the track and field, and they're playing for the Titans and the Braves. And it's cool to see that my only motive and main objective was to be great and to keep up so I could call myself normal.
So, and how did your parents deal with it? With you, obviously you were different than pretty much everybody in the city.
Yes, you know, I was different, and you know, I grew up, and one thing they taught me is like, Blake, your biggest disability is not going to be your legs, right? That's life. You put your legs on as just as much as I put my shoes on, but it's going to be people, how they treat you with your legs. And when I can remember my dad pulled me aside when I was like 9 years old, and he told me, Blake, I can't coach you no more because he's 5'6", 265, so his knowledge on the is stopped by the age of 9.
Yeah.
But he pulled me to the side, and he's like, Blake, you have to have a new coach. There might be times where he might let you not run that extra run or tells you to sit to the side. And when he does that, tell him no, and you finish every run that he makes you do. And when he told me that, he really didn't understand, but it was like 2 weeks later the coach gave me out.
He gave you an out and said, you know, because you're missing your legs, you can go sit on the side.
You don't have to do sprints. You don't have to do sprints.
Poor Blake.
Yeah, poor Blake, right? Yeah. It must suck for him. And in that moment, I remember the exact words my dad told me, and he said, and I kept running. I kept running harder, and then of course the kids don't want to get beat by the kid with no legs doing sprints. How slow are you? And I seen that motivation that I brought to the table. You know, I wasn't the fastest kid out there, but I could prove to people that I had the biggest heart that I'm going to fight to the end. And that was able to transcend not only to my life, but to my track and field world, to more basketball, and just every day of living, and showing the world and proving the world what you truly can do.
So you're watching the 2008 played Paralympics on
yes.
TV, and you see a guy named Oscar Pistorius
yes.
from South Africa,
yes.
who's obviously pretty special,
yes.
winning everything.
Yes.
And you'd never seen the C-sprint legs before and wondering, how the heck do I get some of those?
Never. And, you know, I seen the 100 meters. It was, you know, Oscar, Jerome, Singleton, Marlon Shirley, Brian Frazier, some big dogs, you know, ESPN top 10. And I seen that, and I remember I was a freshman in college, sitting in my dorm room at the University of Tennessee. I go from sitting down to standing up. I was just man, I almost dropped the cereal. I had a bowl of cereal, you know, on a college diet.
Fruit Loops,
of yes. course. And I can remember dropping my bowl of cereal, like, oh my goodness, you know, I was inspired. It was something that I've been yearning for, waiting for my whole life. I just didn't know what it was going to be. And seeing that, I wasn't intimidated. That was the last thing. I was motivated and said, that's what I'm going to do. So I started emailing people, started reaching out. Of course, I heard a lot of no's.
Right.
But, you know, through this guy to that guy, I remember an old guy, Ryan Fenton, used to run out of Nashville. Contacted him. He introduced me with Coach Carter, Peter Harsh.
Yes.
Peter Harsh, the Challenge Athletes Foundation. And ever since, yeah.
And so you call Challenge Athletes Foundation, and they're like, hey, I think we can get you a set of legs.
Yes.
And you go to your dad, and your dad's response is,
what's the scam? Do they need a credit card number?
Nobody's going to send you $30,000 worth a leg.
Right.
If they're saying they are,
it's something's up.
Too good to be true.
It's too good to be true. And honestly, it really is. It's too good to be true. A company that understands that insurance doesn't cover prosthetics, that you want to play on a high level, that's considered a luxury and not a necessity. That's sad. You know, that's something I have to deal with my whole life. It's to the point where my alignment has been altered because I had two choices. I only was able to have one pair of walking legs or running legs growing up as a child. So I told the doctors to put me on my toes. And so I could.
Interesting.
Yeah, so now dealing with the physical therapist, trying to get me the fastest runner I can be, I deal with those posture issues to when I was a child.
Knowing that you were going to get one set of legs, so you had to
put myself in that position.
So you get some legs
yes.
from CAF. They
yes.
get you legs.
Yes.
And you and your dad go out to the track.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And was he put you in ankle weight?
Yeah. We put me he got a weight vest from Walmart. 20 pound weight vest. We had a hill by my house.
I would run Billy. Those.
Little Billy, right? Like, he was the coach. He would have an iPod. And he would start it. Go. And I would run hand time. And
yeah.
I would come across 100 meters. I mean, I think we were actually doing 110 meters. Cause we didn't know that. We never ran track. My dad never ran track. What are we doing? And I would come through 13 seconds, you know, 12 seconds.
Yeah.
And we're like, that's qualifying. We should be okay. Keep doing that in the hot Tennessee sun.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I get ready to qualify and run my first event at the Endeavor Games.
Endeavor Games yes. in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Pile sure. the family into the station
Let's
wagon.
Go. You guys are 13 ready.
13 hours. I just envision.
Are you ready, me, Bob? Are you ready, Jim Bob? Are you ready? We call the whole house up.
Yeah.
Everybody's coming.
Everybody's coming. You're piling a station wagon. You drive 14 hours. Endeavor Games in Oklahoma. And you come out to the track, and you are as green as yes. green can be.
I have no clue.
Had you even known the starting block things?
Nope.
Had you ever even seen those things before?
Never seen starting blocks. You know, never ran a track meet. Didn't even know what the track felt like. Didn't
yes.
know what should I do for a warm up. Didn't
yes.
know. I didn't even know how to stretch.
Right.
I didn't know nothing. You know, I was so green. And actually, when I look it back, you know, now I ran, you know, at the Paralympic Games,
yeah, yeah.
80,000 people. But that moment, you know, when there was only 20 people out
yeah.
there, and that was my first track meet, you know, that's one of the greatest feelings I've ever felt in my life.
And you end up winning 100, 200, 400.
Yes, yes.
Going to Brazil.
Yes.
Not too shabby.
Yeah, it's all
right. Yeah,
right,
right,
first day.
Right away. Right away. So, Rudy, since you were sort of the pioneer, right, you were the guy back then when we started Challenge Athlete Foundation, there were no other kids. You were the only kid. Talk a little bit about, you know, being the only kid and trying to, because you were, you know, because, and all three of you, I think, can relate this, you guys sort of had to grow up a little fast,
yeah.
right? Because you were responsible, like in Rudy's case, you were sort of the breadwinner of the family.
Yeah,
as
by,
well.
By the time I was 8 years old, I had a few sponsors who actually paid the bills.
So, I mean, you were the sponsored athlete. I think you bought the home your family
yes,
lives in.
Yes.
And that's a lot of pressure. And Roderick, coming from what, you know, where you came from, your mom obviously was responsible, but you guys are living, you're homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So, Rudy, talk a little bit about that extra pressure of being, you know, being in the public eye, being on the Disney Channel, being the breadwinner?
You know, I'd say for starters, I mean, it's an amazing, amazing opportunity. It's, I tell people every day I'm living the dream because, you know, me, Blake and Roderick and other guys out there, you know, we, in a sense, we're the first generation of Paralympic athletes who have had the equipment that we have now, who, yeah. you know, we were able to, you know, go out and break records. But more importantly, we have a responsibility. And I don't mean that in a something that, you know, you know, you have to do this, but it's to us, it's bigger than what we do, you know, in our sport, because, you know, there's a whole generation of kids out there who really believe that they can't, you know, go after their dreams, or they can't live an active, you know, fulfilling lifestyle just because they're missing an arm or they're missing a leg, or, you know, so it's much more bigger than, you know, than just going out and winning a gold medal. It's getting ready for the next generation of kids who are going to be beating all of our records. And
except for Blake's.
Unless he runs a 44.
Nope.
We'll see.
Rudy, talk a little bit about, so you guys recently heard about a young man up in Long Beach.
Yeah.
Ruben Marin.
Yes, yes.
And Ruben was, you know, just innocent bystander. Gets shot in a drive-by, I think up in Long Beach.
Yes, yes.
End up losing his leg below the knee?
Yeah, a 17-year-old boy in high school, loves playing, you know, baseball and, you know, running and, yeah. you know, very active. And he ended up, you know, being in a wrong place at the wrong time. And he got a bullet went through his shin and shattered his shin. And basically the doctors had to amputate right above the knee a few days later.
Okay.
And so I actually just met Ruben last weekend. I went out to Long Beach, UCLA right there, one of the hospitals, and he was still maybe 2 or 3 days you know, after the surgery.
Yeah.
And when I seen him, he you know, he wasn't very motivated, and he was very, very discouraged.
Well, and this just happened in early June, right?
Yes, yes. So this is, you know, you're talking about a boy who you know, grew up in LA, who gets his leg amputated and then thinks his life is over.
I mean, what was his sports? Was baseball. Soccer player,
soccer
baseball,
player. Baseball,
baseball,
and soccer.
Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, to me, that's you know, that's pretty crazy that, you know, a kid who now in today's world gets the leg amputated and thinks that he can't play sports no more. He can't wear the same shoes. You know, it's the small things. Like, one of the first things he asked me, like I said about the shoes, is that if he can still wear the same ones that he had. He you know, he just didn't know. And
right.
So being able to take my legs off and show him my walking legs, running legs, and, you know, just basically let him know that, you know, this is just a start of a new life for him. And you know, it's, you know, something that we do, I think, on a pretty regular
basis. Robert, talk about that. So the three of you went up to meet with Ruben, and, you know, I'm sure you guys do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But how important is that to you, and how does that help you with your motivation, your training?
It's honestly an honor, because I know for us growing up, we were on our own.
Yeah.
And to see like three elite athletes come to your door and want to have a one-on-one discussion with you and just hang out with you and get to know you and show you that there's other options out there, it makes a bigger difference than anything ever could, you know?
Yeah, Blake.
Yeah, you know, you talk about that accident actually happened a few days after his birthday.
He just turned 17, right?
He just turned 17. You know, he's a varsity starter for baseball. You know, he's a sophomore. And you know, that's one thing that me, Rudy, and Roderick all know, that sometimes life isn't fair. You know, and a lot of
you guys know it better than pretty much everybody.
Everybody else doesn't know it, you know what I mean? And, you know, when you see a young man dealt in this situation, you know, you get a lot of sympathy. You know, people feel bad for him, right?
Sure.
And every word that comes out their mouth is sympathy. They're going bad and hopes and wishes and dreams. And honestly, that I felt like when me and Rudy and Roderick was able to go up there and just tell them our lives and tell them about our trials and tribulations, struggles that we went through, it wasn't out of sympathy. It was out of pure motivation.
I think most importantly, though, we didn't beat around the bush. You know, we went in there and started asking him questions that, you know, he really never thought about before.
Like what?
What do you want to do when you grow up? What college are you going to go to? You know, this stuff like that
I keep asking you that. Oh my God, right?
That was a good one.
You said it so well, Bob.
Oh man.
That's funny. I was going to say, honestly, the one thing I noticed from when we went to go talk to Ruben, Rudy had met him a few days before me and Blake did.
Yes.
But just seeing us all come in and introduce ourselves and seeing how much he lit up, just seeing that there were other guys out there like him, and then seeing the fact that what we're doing is still things, like, it's still similar to what he wants to do, you know? And you just see, like, his heart, his energy, everything coming back, and he's just like, yeah, man, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and it's just... It was great. It was a great fit.
And even better for the family. I mean, the family was just standing in the background.
Part, right?
They were listening, taking it all in. And they, you know, for them, you know, their son, you know, had an accident. And, you know, they're thinking their son's going to have trouble, you know, going to school and,
sure.
you know, talking to girls or, you know, stuff like that. And for us to go in there and just let them know that, you know, well, this is going to be a new awesome life.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty cool.
Well, Blake, for you, what's been the biggest challenge? You know, obviously you've, you know, been on the Arsenio Hall show. I mean, people look at you now and NBA All-Star game, all that type of stuff. There's a lot of accolades, lot of cool stuff happening. What was a low point for you?
You know, at the end of the day, when you're going through this, you know, my whole motive is to change lives, is to help people.
Right.
You know, I wake up each and every day, I don't wish no ill will against nobody. You know, that's bad karma that can come back in the future that you do not want. And even though, you know, you're trying to do the best you can, and one as an athlete, but as a human being, you still can't please everybody. And that was something that for me to comprehend and to understand is that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there's still some people might be upset with you. At the end of the day, people still think I have the unfair advantage when I'm running a race against guys with legs and I have the no legs. You know, it's part of it. I feel like that's how the world stays balanced. You know, I'm like I said, I'm not perfect. But every day that I wake up, I do the best I can for everybody, you know, what I have.
Well, what I find it interesting is over the years, people at first are like, oh, we'll let that poor guy in the wheelchair participate, or we'll let that poor guy who's missing a leg. Wait, he beat me?
Wait a minute.
You know?
Wait a minute.
Sure he started at the same time?
I remember one of my favorite stories is they had a bench press competition, and it was a guy missing both legs who won.
Oh, no
And
way.
People protested because the rule is you have to have your feet on the ground while you're bench pressing.
Are you this guy had no feet. Are you people serious? Get mad when guys with no legs beat guys with legs.
Yeah. Well, and we talk about that as a kid. You know, you started swimming. Swimming was your sport. Yeah. You start from a little boy, and at your mom and dad were smart enough to realize that, hey, swimming can give him freedom. Through sport.
Yes.
Take the legs off, jump in the water, you can be the same as everybody else. But you weren't the same as everybody else because every kid was killing you.
Oh, yeah. I started swimming on an able-bodied swim team, and every practice I go to, you know, I'd always hear kids calling me names like, you know, the no-leg boy, and, you know, they you know, give me some easier workouts than the other kids, and, you know, that used to make me really mad because, you know, in a sense like Blake, I just wanted to be like everyone else. So, you know, I set my first goal when I was about 7 years old in swimming, and I told my parents and my friends that I want to beat a kid with legs. That's all I want to do. I just want to touch the kid out and you know, have him say to his friends, man, the kid with no legs beat me. And and finally I just kept going after it, and you know, it finally happened. And you know, it was a beautiful feeling. And you know, I don't know how what the kid's doing nowadays.
Yeah. He's in drug rehab.
He's in rehab right now. Right? Good job.
Thank you for ruining his life. That's okay.
He's alcoholic.
He's an alcoholic. He's a cocaine anonymous. Basically, you ruined his life. So you come into the wall. And you out touch him, and you could hear his buddies next to him.
Man, the kid with no legs beat me. And, everyone's all looking at him, and his teammates are making fun of him. And you know, I was sitting there like, yeah, we're gonna do this again and again.
First of many.
That's it.
The first of many. Getting into, so you're swimming and then triathlon.
Yeah,
I mean, you talk about a sport that is about as complicated as it gets because you got to swim, and for you to balance on a bicycle, and you don't have quads or hamstrings, so you basically are using your butt muscles when you're riding
the bike. And then the biking legs, and then, you know, the clipless pedals on the bottom of the feet, and then you need running legs.
A lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff that goes involved in the triathlon. So when I first started, I just did relays. A good friend of mine, Terry Martin, used to work for Power Bar. He, me and him did our first triathlon. triathlon when I was 8 years old. I did the swim, he did the bike and run, and it just seemed like a pretty cool environment.
Nice people.
Triathletes are very supportive, very nice people, and so I wanted to do another one and another one. And when I was 10 years old, I did my first sprint triathlon up in Benelli Park. There's something about, swimming and then getting on a bike. And at that time I had big training wheels, so it didn't look as cool as I hoped it would. I got on the run and, it was freedom. It was freedom. This is what I wanted to do ever since I was born. I didn't have the opportunity to in my younger years, but as soon as I did, I went after it full bore. And I think I went to the max because now I can call myself an Ironman finisher.
1605
was a very, very long day.
Well, and one of the things that I always love about your story was Michael Davidson was a prosthetist at Loma Linda Hospital. And your mom, who is a saint, she was the one who was calling Michael and calling and saying, listen, okay, Rudy had his legs amputated. For our audience, Rudy, it's called pterygium syndrome.
Congenital birth defect, and had webbed hands, which I wish they would have kept.
Yeah, it could be good for swimming, right? Yeah.
There you go, natural swimmer. Awesome. And then I had behind my knees, I had a flap of skin there, which wouldn't allow me to, extend my legs out. So I went through about 15 operations from when I was 5, and nothing worked. So at the age of 5, I was pretty wise at that age, just being the youngest. Yeah. I have 4 kids and being in a hospital throughout my whole childhood, and it was either the doctors told me and my parents, well, we can amputate or we can you can stay in a wheelchair. And at that young age, it was easy. It was a black and white decision. It was sit in a wheelchair or get some cool robot legs, and I took that chance because I figured I'd have the best odds. What looked cool.
Now in this day and age, people would go online, they see video of you, they see video of Blake, they video of Roderick, and they go, okay, my kid will be able to walk, he'll be able to run, he'll be able to do all sorts of stuff. Back then, there wasn't any of that. Your mom wanted you to be a kid, wanted you to run, mm-hmm. wanted you to play.
At that time, back in 95, in the 90s, even in the early 2000s, that a lot of prosthetists and doctors considered double above knee amputees as immobile. They considered, right. They just said, you're better off in a wheelchair. If you do walk, you can only walk for 5 minutes at a time with a walker and assistance. And so, at that time, I had doctors telling me, my parents and everyone, I would never walk, but they just would never accept that. And my first prosthetist, Michael Davidson, he was fresh out of college. His first year, I became one of his patients. And the first thing my mom asked him is, when is my son going to run? And he says, lady, we're going to have trouble getting your boy to walk.
He's on stilts.
Yeah.
So, he's on stilts. He'll never do that. Yeah.
But right then, Michael Davidson, he knew that he was going to have to get creative. And we created a very unique partnership. I was 6-7 year old kid causing trouble, and Michael Davidson would always be fixing my legs. And
how many legs did you break?
When I was younger, I went through at least 50 pairs of insurance bought legs. The knees would always break, the feet would break, my sockets, something on my belt mm-hmm. which kept my legs on would break. They're very uncomfortable. They were heavy. I did not have a good time after I had my legs amputated. It wasn't what I envisioned. Right. But as soon as I kept going to Mr. Mike's every week to get new legs, they actually had to put bungee cords on my knees so they would bend. That was the way they figured that that's the best option. So we got pretty desperate, and my mom basically made a video of me, playing tetherball, jumping over walls, and just showing the companies who made
the company
called FlexFoot that made carbon fiber feet with very tight, strong titanium knees that look cool for kids
and cost
a lot of money, which insurance at the time did not.
There's no way. You guys are living in a 700 square foot trailer. Your dad was cooking a truck stop.
There you go.
You're not buying that stuff.
No. So she sent this VHS tape to FlexFoot at the time, and about a few months later, they ended up giving me a new pair of legs. And I tell people it went from it felt like going from a Pinto to a Ferrari. It was just night and day. I could put my legs on within a minute. I didn't have to worry about getting them wet. They were strong. I didn't have to worry about breaking them or losing a piece somewhere out on the playground. So it was it was very transforming, and it was just the start of something bigger than, you know. I got my first pair of running legs when I was 9 years old from Van Phillips, the creator of Flexfoot, and it's been awesome ever since. Yeah.
You and Mike were sort of NASCAR. You were basically testing stuff out the kids use now.
All the time. I would tell him, you know, this does not work right. You know, you got to find something else for this, or, you know, especially for the sockets. As an amputee, the sockets are usually the most important part. So you got to make sure that those are very comfortable. And so we were always trying new things with the sockets, also with the knees and the feet. You know, just consistently breaking them, putting them to the test. And that's what me and Mike did.
What I love is Mike told me once that, you know, after your mom had called, I don't know how many different times, he finally agreed to meet with you and her. And he said when he walked out in the waiting room, you were doing a handstand on the walker.
Oh, yeah.
At that point, he realized, if this kid wants to run, I better figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't about helping you run. It was helping you be a kid. It was helping you play.
Just being a normal kid. I just wanted to go outside, play football, play
skateboard,
baseball, ride my bike. I just wanted to do things like that, which all the kids in my neighborhood were doing, brothers and sisters were doing. So it was nothing out of the ordinary that we were asking. But
it was out of the ordinary.
At that time, it was.
Yeah. The other story Mike told me was that, you know, you guys are still close today.
Yeah. Oh, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very much.
And for years and years and years, Mike made your legs. So back, he said, when you were about 9 years old or so, the two of you, you know, he would basically, Rudy would come in and my legs are broken, and they'd look at the legs together, and he goes, you know, I looked at Rudy as my collaborator. Rudy was like a partner on our mission to build these legs that anybody
can
use.
I was in sixth grade.
In sixth grade, yeah. And, you know, he said, so I'm sitting there and I'm saying, Rudy, how did this break? Well, it broke on the side here. I don't really know how. I was jumping off a wall. He goes, so I take the cup and I turn it over and all these Tootsie Rolls fall out. And I realize my collaborator is, is freaking using his leg to stash his stash.
The teacher's never found it.
The teacher's never found it. But that to me was the fact that Mike understood that, right? Yeah. That he understood that he needed a collaborator. He needed you.
Yes, yes. As a prosthetist, that's, you know, nowadays, I hate to say it, but it's unique to find a prosthetist who is willing to work with a patient and take the input from the patient and listen to the patient, because, you know, they have a lot of prosthetists out there who, you know, me and Blake and Roger, we joke all the time, because we say, how are you going to listen to a guy who tells me that I should have legs this way when he has two real legs?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's just, sometimes you come across, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Well, and the other, along that same line, the power that you guys have walking into a hospital, walking into Ruben's house.
Yes.
Right? I can walk in all day long and, again, is just some idiot who works for Challenge Athletes. But you guys, you know, you walk the walk and talk the talk. So, you know, it's for you, Blake. Talk a little bit about the people who reach out to you, who you've never met before. Because you talked at one time that your hero growing up was Bo Jackson.
Yeah.
I never really thought of it from this perspective before, but he played with a prosthetic hip.
Yeah. 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 And he was the first, you know, ever to play on a professional level, to come back from an injury like that, to play with a prosthetic hip. And this is back in 1990. You know?
Right. So yes. Yeah.
For him to do that just lets you know what type of great athlete that he was. And, you know, as growing up as a child, especially with the disability, going through the things I was going through, you know, when you're going through hard times, only thing you need is one reassurance. You don't need the whole world doing it. You don't need 100 people doing it. If you just see one person do it, That's all the change of perception that you need in your life to think, oh, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And that's what Bo Jackson was for me, seeing that at 4 and 5 years old, me being the only amputee in my area. The only time I would see another amputee was Rudy's pretty face on Disney.
Everybody
saw Rudy on Disney,
saw
right?
Him on Disney Channel.
He used to hate on me, didn't you?
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't call it hate. It was just a little jealousy.
Well, but you know what? Think about that. Think about the awareness, and this goes back to Robin Williams. Robin Williams.
Yes.
Being on Oprah with Rudy, right?
Yeah.
And Robin being at our triathlon with Rudy. And then that gets national exposure for people seeing you on Nightline or wherever.
Yep.
And that leads to families in places like Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Going, wait a second, my son's missing his legs. why can't he do
what he's doing? And, what he's doing. And for me as a kid, you have to understand, seeing Rudy, it was like, oh my goodness. Once again, I was motivated. Like, if he can do it, then I for sure can do it, because I'm twice as more athletic than he is. Look at this little white kid. What? I'm black. I'm an athlete. I can die. But you know, that's the beauty of it, you know. And for see how Rudy inspired me, then 20 years later, you know, we become really close friends, and we're now on the same mission. You know, I tell him my story every day. He's like, man, if I would have never met you, if you never done what you've done, I potentially would have never been here before.
I saw you recently on the Queen Latifah show.
Yeah.
And there was another double amputee little boy. And so it's funny how things go full circle.
Yeah.
Because not long before that, I see you on Arsenio Hall.
A year later.
You know, meeting your hero.
My hero, yeah.
Bo Jackson. Yeah. Now, did you meet him when you were a kid?
I met him one time when I was 4 years old. He came to Knoxville, Tennessee. That was my only time I had a surgery.
Yes.
And when I was four, so I was in a wheelchair for 6 weeks.
Yes.
I had a full body cast. And I missed my first baseball season. So my grandmother and my aunt wrote a letter to Bo Jackson telling him I was really down. I was normally a happy kid, but I just had my surgery. I haven't been able to walk in 6 weeks. Could you come meet him? Words of encouragement. He comes.
He showed up.
Knoxville, Tennessee, gets me behind backstage passes, sits with me for 30 minutes. I'm taking pictures. He signs all my autographs. And he, you know, he's known not to be, you know, the public. He's
right.
Really close to himself. He's a very private individual. But he treated me like family. And you know, it was, you know, even though that was one time for me, that's all I needed.
Flash ahead.
Yes.
You're on Arsenio Hall. And Arsenio's going, hey, Blake, so, you know, you're running 10.91 for 100, you're running 21.7 for 200, you're running 47.9 for 400. Are these the legs you're wearing now, or that's what you're wearing? And you're like, no. I wear my Oser.
My Oser, my running blade, you know, that guy from CAF. And, you know, that told me from the beginning that, Blake, we're going to bring the legs out midway through the show.
Sure.
Be ready for it. We'll have a producer with a hat and some glasses. He'll run in, run out, be good to go. We'll talk about the legs. Then he asked when, then Arsenio goes and asks for the legs. Of course, Bo Jackson walks out. He was
total surprise.
I had no clue. Yeah, he hasn't been on TV in
forever.
15 years. Yeah. 20 years. They did a 30 for 30 for me.
Right.
You know, other than that, his Bo Bikes Bama, he hasn't done a radio show. Not much. You know, people almost forget about Bo Jackson and his greatness. And I see him walk out with my blades, and I'm just trying to process it in my mind on how on earth did they get this man, you know, still my hero, still my, to walk out on stage to represent me. You know, we hugged for like 20 seconds, and, you know, I didn't want to let go, right? And that was my chance to thank him. Tell him, thank you for not giving up on your career, because so many people always ask, what if, Bo? Like, what if you would have got hurt? You know, but I'm looking at him, thank you for getting hurt and showing the world what you truly can do.
That
you know,
really
with
point.
Not only with your life, but with prosthetics. You know, imagine, you know, excited if a man can go back on an MLB level, you know, a professional level with a prosthetic.
Get a home run, his first at bat.
But even though it is a hip, imagine the inspiration and that he started from, not only for kids like Rudy or Roger and me as well. And that's just a continued cycle. You know, that's all we can do truly with our lives, is just leave something, you know, to inspiration. Not about the money. It's not about the medals. It's not about the world records. It's just the inspiration that we can spread, and they can spread to somebody else and somebody else.
So then you're passing it on.
Yeah.
On Queen Latifah show. Yeah. They call you up and say, listen, we got a young boy. I mean, you're his hero.
Yeah, he's
got
your poster. I'm his hero, right? He had a fat head.
Rudy's fat head.
I had Rudy's fat head when I was, you know, 12 years old.
Yeah.
In his little Speedo. You should see it.
Yeah, that thimble and rubber band.
Yeah.
That was good. Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, that was Robert.
Yeah, that was Robert. All right. So, yeah, you know, he's on the couch. And she asks, here Queen Latifah's asking, well, who's your hero? Who do you want to be when you grow up? You know, he's sitting there, Blake Leeper, on national TV. You know, I started running 5 years ago. This is happening all so fast.
Yeah.
And she said, well, if you had something to say to him, if he was right here, what would you say? And he's like, I'll ask him, you know, how to go fast. Or just, it was a simple question. And he said, lo and behold, I snuck out behind him with my blades on.
Yes.
And was able to surprise him. And his jaw dropped just as big as my jaw dropped the year before.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just crazy. to see not only how far I've come in my life, but the things I've been able to do and all the people that's helped me to get to this moment. I just like moments like those is just thanking them, telling
them. It's very humbling.
Yes, it's a very humbling experience.
So what's happened with that young man since?
He actually came down to a triathlon at STDC weekend here in San Diego.
Did he really?
Yeah, he was out. Yeah,
he's kicking butt right now.
Yeah, he's
running 5Ks.
Yeah. Is he really?
Yeah, so he's actually an 8K. He's a double.
Where does he live?
He's a double.
Somewhere in the East Coast.
Okay, East Coast. He's a double above the knee at MPT, so he won't be competing against me, thank God.
Yeah.
But my two guys to the left over me on here. They're going to have some problems.
He's looking strong.
They're going to have some problems. He's going to break their records for sure.
I love that. So Roderick, one of the things we talk, obviously, the athletic part is really big, but your family, nobody had ever graduated high school, right? And so your mom moved back to Alabama?
Alabama.
You guys moved back to Alabama.
Birmingham, yeah.
And you were in a good school here, but then you moved back to Alabama, and the school you were in wasn't great.
No, not.
And what do you think the percentage of graduates was? Like 40-50%?
The high school graduation rate was 62%.
62% for high school graduation.
That would not graduate, that would drop out.
Oh, 62% dropped out.
Dropped out, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And your coach here, who became more than a coach, Alan Voisard, right? Mm-hmm. He became a mentor, a friend.
A boss.
Yeah, but he was the one who really helped you in terms of swimming and had belief in you. So when you moved back to Alabama, he lost daily contact, but he wanted you to go to a better school.
Alan, he started out as my coach. He told me how to swim when I was 10. Now he's my Paralympic swim coach still to this day. But back in the day, I think I was 16, struggling through high school.
Yeah.
And I remember he called up one day and he was like, "Hey, man, what's going on with school?" And I was like, "Yeah, Alan, I don't know about school right now." And he just flipped out. He's like, "All right, we're going to get you out of that school. We're going to get you into a new school."
Yeah.
He said, "I'll pay for it. I don't care. We're just going to get you a good education."
How amazing is that?
So
he paid to put you in a private school.
Yeah.
Graduated high school.
High school.
Yeah, I remember watching a video of you walking across the stage. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Then went to college where?
University of North Alabama.
Graduated there?
Mm-hmm.
When did you graduate?
December of 2014, I graduated, got my degree.
Woo. Anybody in your family? Yeah, there you go. First anybody in your family? Nobody in your family's ever graduated from college.
Everybody, you know what? The generation before me, my mom's generation, I guess, everybody kind of struggled with school.
Yeah.
But my generation is doing a lot better. A lot of my cousin, she just got her RN.
Wow.
She's going to be a nurse. And, you know, my generation is doing a lot better. Everybody's finished.
What'd you get your degree in?
My degree was in communication arts. So my goal was to be a motivational speaker and travel around and inspire younger kids that were going through the same thing we went through and hopefully get them in the Paralympics at first, but, you know, anything they want to do, basically.
So, but through your struggles with first trying to figure out how to swim and then becoming a great swimmer, what is the 100-meter breaststroke? Mm-hmm. What led you to breaststroke?
Honestly,
you got the freestyle guns, by the way. The butterfly guns.
Honestly, the breaststroke, I noticed that I'm not trying to sound cocky. I'm a little stronger than the people in my category.
Yes.
And it was a stroke I struggled with the most. So I decided to learn how to swim it better.
Yes.
And then once I started swimming it more, I was like, this is my race. This is something I could really do well in. And now I'm still working on it. I'm working on my technique now, and hopefully by 2016, I'll be, you know.
And what's the procedure for making it to the Paralympics for 2016?
They'll have Paralympic trials next summer.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you had to be in at least the top eight to get to the trials. You'll get the trials. You have to qualify.
Yeah, you have qualifying time.
Yeah, you have to qualify. Okay. Yeah, it's set. It's easy.
And are you okay with the time right now, or you have to go faster?
My time, I need to drop at least 10 seconds.
You have to drop 10 seconds?
Yeah, if I want to be a contender, if I want a medal.
We're not going just to go.
We're going to medal.
No, you're not crowd filler.
Yeah, no.
No, field
anybody
filler.
Got time for that. We want to go to medal.
Right.
But I need to be in the 128 range if I want a chance of medaling, and my best is a 138.
And do you know, so really it's just you against the clock at this point.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about the other guys
until
you get there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's nobody in America that's going fast enough to actually race, that I actually race against.
Right.
So it's easy for
it's
me
all
to
your,
focus on.
So it's European guys you have to worry about.
Yeah. It's easier right now for me to focus on my times.
Right.
But once it comes time for trials and hopefully Rio, it's going to be, you know, everybody else.
So, Rudy, your first Paralympics, 2000, you were 16 years old.
I turned 15. I turned 16 there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's cool.
and the nice thing is, between the ages, when you first connected with CAF and you traveled around and did some swimming stuff.
Yes.
So you had already done some travel. What was the Athens experience like?
So prior to Athens, I traveled around the States. I think I went to Brazil once, and mm-hmm. so I got a little bit of traveling experience. But Athens was my first time traveling by myself. Usually I travel with my mom, and
sure.
so going over to Athens with the team as a 15-year-old guy, I mean you're living the dream. Being in Athens, just getting to the Olympic Village. And then going into the cafeteria and seeing all the countries and then all the different types of food, and then obviously the free McDonald's out in the way back in the corner. it was really hard to take it all in for your first experience. And so my first competition was on day one of the whole Paralympic Games, and I was the first heat, and so I just went out and just swam my own race, and I ended up doing a lot better than I ever expected. Ever dreamed of. I got a world record in the morning in prelims.
How much time did you take off?
I dropped about 10 seconds.
10 seconds?
Yeah.
In one?
Yeah,
one.
Just,
oh, wow.
Just like that. I mean, I really don't know how it happened. I think just being in the moment and having the crowd cheering. And I vividly remember swimming in the last 15 meters. And, you know, when you get to that level, and your coaches, you know, they're always telling you don't look around.
Right.
Stay focused. And so, of course, I was coming into the wall, I was looking around, and I seen I was going to win my prelim heat, which I thought would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
A cool Facebook post or something. And then, you know.
Did they even have Facebook back then?
I don't think so.
MySpace.
But,
yeah.
You know, I ended up turning around, looking at the scoreboard, and it had a WR next to my name. And so it's kind of in disbelief for about, 20 minutes after my race. And then kind of came back down to earth, and, I realized I had a do it again for finals and get that gold medal, because no one cares what happens in prelims.
No, yeah, that'd be worse. Is to break the world record and lose.
Oh my God, I hate to break the world record.
That's what I did. That's what I did in London. So
that's right, you did.
Yes, yeah. He did do it in London.
I was there.
You were there.
Oh my God, who would break the world record in prelims and lose in finals? I would
really love to take the time to explain that, because that really gets to me. But we're gonna let that.
Well, so you win the gold there, yeah. And then you win the gold in Beijing, and
I got a bronze in Beijing too. So
yes, yeah.
And then London, London was my first time going for two sports. I qualified for swimming and track and field, and so 6 months before the games, I was trying to juggle both sports, and that was very difficult for me. Just my main focus was swimming, but I also had to go out on the track and practice and do this and that. So it was definitely difficult training for two sports. But now, like I said, we're going towards Rio, and I have a little bit better understanding of how to do that. Most of coaches won't allow you to even try two sports. So
the nice thing is, I mean, as much as I'm sure you wanted to win another gold, the fact that the competition has gotten better.
I mean, in Athens, I won by 15 seconds.
Yes.
Silver guy came in 15 seconds. In Beijing, I won by 9 seconds. And then in London, I got beat by less than a second. So
that's...
It's a beautiful thing. And the fact that I got beat makes me even hungrier than if I would have got the gold.
Well, and back in the day, we were worried about getting enough double amputees, mm-hmm. right, to fill out a category,
yep.
right? You needed to have a certain number of athletes and a certain number of countries mm-hmm. to make that work. Roderick, let's talk about your Paralympic experience. Oh, sorry, you don't have one.
Oh, got him.
No, he didn't.
We're going to change that very soon.
We're changing that. We're changing it. See, Roger, you see how that feels? Oh, you never want that feeling ever. Go train now.
On that note, I'm going to right now.
Explain that to your girlfriend.
Oh,
explain what just happened there. So, Blake, let's talk about your Paralympic experience.
Yes.
So I was there in the stadium.
No. Yes.
Oh, yeah. We love your eyes.
Yeah.
So all love.
That was good. So... We're in the stadium, and a lot of times you guys compete, and there's your mom and dad, and there's three relatives who are in the stands, right?
Yeah.
It's not a lot of people at these track meets. But this is the Paralympics in London, and I don't know what it was, but all of a sudden the Paralympics, I think, went. And Rudy, you've been to a number of Paralympics.
Yes.
Do you think the crowds were bigger this year?
Oh, it was another level. London took it to a whole different level.
And Rio's going to be even bigger.
I hope so.
85,000 people in the stadium.
Yes.
All right? And I'm sitting there and going, gosh, you know, I know Blake is an amazing athlete, but how is he going to react to this stage, right? You either are going to, you're going to thrive or you're going to melt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, some people can't handle that stage. Yeah. You're talking the brightest lights in the world. Yeah. Everybody's watching.
Yeah.
So they're introducing, and obviously one of the reasons everybody was there is Oscar Pistorius, who just participated in the Olympics.
So they've seen him for two whole weeks.
He thought
that he was their countryman.
Totally.
The way they cheered for him.
They did. And you're in a lane next to him.
Yes.
Camera comes on, you know, onto each athlete. And, okay, they're going to introduce Blake now. Camera comes on to you. You're jumping up and down, pointing at the camera. I'm going, I don't think he minds the exposure here. I think this guy loves this.
And, you know, it's funny to think, too, you know, here I am doing that in finals. And Oscar was still, you know, 3-4 seconds faster than me in the 400. But, you know, when you're in that situation, you're in that moment, you know, you don't go in there, you know, knowing that you're going to take second. You know, you go in there regardless of the situation.
Anything can happen
any day. And I just wanted to see, because I knew I was going to be back. I knew I was going to be there, but when I come back, it's going to be a totally different situation. And I was going to be going for a gold medal, but I wanted to see how it felt to go actually think, you know, I'm going to win this race.
Right.
You know, even in my mind, I knew it, you know, as a race.
Well, and the first one was 200.
The first one was 200,
and you're coming down the track. And meanwhile, you're, how many family members?
It's eight of us. Mom, dad, uncle, two aunts, grandmother, and grandfather.
And grandfather.
Yeah, grandfather came. Yes.
And he'd never been in a plane before.
Never flew a day in his life, 73 years old.
So his first flight is basically from Tennessee to London.
Yeah, to London. First flight ever. He can cook some mean ribs, but he's never flown. He doesn't have to. Doesn't do it.
And he's not a teary guy.
Yes, not at all. I've never seen my granddad cry, ever, unless he's chopping onions to cook.
Right.
But other than that.
So coming down the stretch, you're fighting for the bronze.
Yes.
There's two of you.
Yes, two of us. Me and another South African.
Yeah. And take us through that last few yards.
Yeah, you know, it was funny because the year before, Jerome actually beat Oscar for the gold medal, and he dove across the line.
Yes.
And Oscar actually crossed the line beforehand, but since Jerome dove, his torso crossed, and they gave it to Jerome.
Yes.
You know, I was in that race, and I seen that. And, you know, I replayed that over in my head, and here we are a year later. I'm in a situation where it's like 170. I just tied up with the guy coming around as a double. I'm slower out the blocks than he was a single leg, so I finally caught him at the 170 going to the 180. And, you know, I told myself, like, you know, after everything I sacrificed, you know, I moved out here to California. You know, I dropped out of college, you know, a year and a half out. You know, I had to tell that information, you know, news to my mom, you know, and had to prove, show to the world, you know, that I want to be a runner. And I never ran a day in my life. And all that was going through in my head, you know, all the practices and the extra lifts and everything and everybody that sacrificed for me in this moment. You know, this is in 0.5 seconds. but it's a lot, though.
Yeah.
This is like everything's in slow motion.
Man.
Yeah,
it's
slow motion. And then I made a decision at the 180. It's like if I still see him in the corner of my eye, I'm diving. You know, I played baseball growing up. I know how
Pete Rose, baby.
Pete Rose, first head first.
Yeah, yeah.
I knew it was going to hurt, but, you know. And it was at the 195, and I was like, well, I guess I'm going to have to dive. And I just launched myself across the line, which put me right in front of him that I fell, that he fell on top of me. And then I remember they put up Oliveira's name for first. Oscar got beat, then Oscar was second, and then we had to sit there
on the ground
a whole minute.
Yeah,
we're just looking.
Full minute.
It was a full minute, longest minute of my life, and we're just sitting there. And at first, I'm thinking, I had to win this, right? I don't. But for the officials to wait that long, you know, for bronze to fourth place, and we're sitting there. All of a sudden, you see Leaper USA, and I throw my hands up, and my parents are going crazy.
Granddad.
I meet Granddad after. He's crying. He's in tears, kind of like a little two-year-old baby. Yeah, and we'd be at the family reunion, like, hey, does everybody remember when Granddad was crying like a two-year-old? Oh, he hates it. He hates it. And, you know, and for him, it was, you know, I see it. It was like, wasn't tears of, you know, his sadness. It was tears of joy, of, you know, all the worry and concern that he had for his grandson being born without legs, and he finally, you know, that was, you know, was to become a Paralympic medalist. You know, that was tears of joy, just letting all that worries, you know, go away.
It's like he didn't have to worry no more. And that whole moment, you have to understand, you know, 90,000 people there supporting guys that have no limbs at all running.
Amazing.
Oh, my goodness. It's crazy.
Well, and the cool thing is, then, you know, now you're playing with house money. Yeah. You got a medal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So then you come back and run the 400.
Yes.
And you're one spot behind Oscar.
Yes. Yes.
So talk a little bit about, I mean, obviously, I remember after Paralympics, mm-hmm. we were talking about, there was so much buzz about Oscar, much buzz around you and Oliveras that we were talking about track meets in Europe and adding you guys to the able-bodied track meets and creating a lot of buzz, and then Oscar does what Oscar did.
Yeah.
And it sort of ruins everything.
It was sad. You know, I can remember that night, you know, when my friends called me and told me the news. I turned my phone off that night. And at the end of the day, I was just, you know, really sick to my stomach just because, unfortunate, you know, he inspired so many people, including myself.
You're fresh.
You know what I mean? Including my, he was like, you know, how I looked up to him. And, like, he was the only person in front of me that's ran the times and the things.
You needed him.
I would have stopped. I would have quit. I'm like, well, this is good enough. Everybody would have been patting me on my back for breaking an American record at 50 point. But there's a guy out there in the world that's running a 46 and that was born just like me. So what's my excuse? You know, and for him to set that standard so high, it's just, like, goodness. I knew it was going to be gone. You know, it was very sickening. It was.
So, Rod, what will it mean to you to make your first Paralympic team?
Honestly, it's definitely something I've been wanting since I was 10 years old, since I first met Rudy. And I was
figuring if Rudy could do it, everybody should do it.
Anybody can do it.
It must be 7 spots. No, but
if that white boy can swim,
right?
I know. No, it's the opposite now. No, but just being like we were saying, an inspiration to others. Like it's bigger than us.
Yes.
Even though me and Blake were just talking about this, even though we're doing this for ourselves, we're not necessarily doing this for ourselves. You know, me being an African American swimmer, that's not seen.
That's big as it is.
Yeah, that's definitely not seen very much. And for me to go to the Paralympics, being an African American swimmer with no legs and just using basically upper body, you know, besides just doing it for me, I'm representing my family, making them proud. There's kids out there that know, hey, I have a disability, but I can do it just like Roger did, you know?
What do you think, Blake, it would mean to, and right now you're at 47.9, you need to go 46 flat to get to the, not to the Paralympic trials, but to get to the Olympic trials.
Yes.
Now, if you think, if you get there, and your coach right now, Al Joyner, Olympic gold medals. So, if you get there, do you think we'll start hearing that same talk again about he gets an advantage, he's got legs? When people ask you that,
of course,
and say, you get an advantage because you don't have to deal with ankle injuries. Yes. You don't, you know, all the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you can make yourself as tall as you want, all that that noise.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, I said, hey, I've seen Oscar on the track back in the day, and I've seen his leg come off at high speed.
It's scary.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary stuff.
It's scary.
Talk a little bit for the people out there thinking that you might have an advantage of some sort.
Yes, and, you know, I hear this a lot. The man with no legs has an unfair advantage. When you know, my goal is trying to be the fastest runner in the world, legs or no legs. So I'm dealing with the fastest guys who have legs.
Right.
And I still have the unfair advantage. You know, at the end of the day, remember we talked earlier, Bob, that my whole motive, my whole intention is not to cheat. It's not to hoodoo somebody.
Nope.
It's not to take advantage of the situation. It's to do the best I can with what I have, what the technology is presented in front of me.
Within the rules.
Within the rules. You know, I didn't ask to be born without legs. You know, I didn't plan on it. If that was the situation, you have a lot of athletes have their legs amputated. Right? If they didn't make the high school track team, if they didn't make the, you know what I mean, college to get a college scholarship. If you want to take it to that extreme, but people are not doing that. You're not asking for your legs. The world and the lives that me, Rudy, and Roderick have to live as a double leg amputee, you wouldn't even have to fathom it. You wouldn't have to imagine from just, you know, things with liners and sleeves and with humidity and legs coming off when we're sweating and in the pool, infections and scars and all the surgeries.
We get one infection, we can't wear our legs.
Yeah.
It's over.
A month at a time.
Yeah, we're done. Try with the training, with the consistency of having a sleeve, the expensive, you know, if your shoes break, your shoelaces break, it's 50 cents for a shoelace.
Yeah,
my liners are almost like $1,000.
They are.
Close, you know, and I could go through those two, three in a week.
Really?
You know, yeah, easily. And you got to think, if I'm not a sponsored athlete or if I'm in a not-so-fortunate country,
right.
How could I ask myself to take it to another level or take it to the next level? Because to be on that highest level, it's all about consistent training.
Right.
And you want that consistency. And if technology is changing as well, mm-hmm. as much as I'm growing up, how can I stay consistent? So I'm not even reaching my true potential because something's being changed
right.
on a daily basis now with technology. And I mean, at the end of the day, there's always going to be the argument because the legs look so cool. They look so futuristic. You have the carbon fiber material, but at the end of the day, that's what we want. Right,
and it's not attached.
It's not attached. It's always
that's the thing.
It's always something. You know, you have those ligaments, those tendons that connect your whole body. Then you have your skin that connects your bones and your muscles together to make it feel as one unit. But when I'm out there running, I'm using something to make me go fast, and that's always going to be in the back of my mind. It's something attached to me.
It can come off at any time.
It can come off at any time.
The toughest part, Roderick, about being an amputee, I mean, obviously you guys have all been amputees since you were very young, but on a daily basis, what's the toughest thing you deal with?
I think, I can't speak for all of us, but I know for myself, back in the day, the toughest thing was just getting over our disability, knowing that we can do whatever we want.
Right.
And now today, the toughest thing we deal with is changing people's perception, because they think that there's still people in the world that think we can't do certain things, mm-hmm. you know, even if we tell them how much we've done, it's still sympathy coming out of the, you know, coming to us like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm sorry to see this. I'm sorry to see that. And to have to change perception one by one with everybody on a daily
every day.
Basis.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
That's
yeah.
the hardest part, but it's worth it in the end.
I think for, you know, for me, the toughest thing, you know, being an amputee is which outfit I'm going to make look good for the next day with these prosthetic legs. Hey, come on, guys. Look at me. No. I need some sweet shoes. Come on, guys. I mean, seriously. Seriously, like, no. But honestly, though, Bob, it's funny. You know, me, Roderick, and Rudy, our whole lives, you heard Rudy say earlier, and Roderick, our main motive, our main objective was to be normal, right? We had grown up as a kid.
Sure.
We just wanted to be normal. We just wanted to be treated normal. Now we're adults, and now we understand that that's the last thing you want to be in life. You want to be unique.
You want to blend.
Who wants to blend? And then we've been running from that, you know, building characteristics to blend in. And now, as an adult, we've looked at each other at times and laughed.
I wish I would have known this in high school.
See?
Yeah.
Man. You would have had two girlfriends instead of one.
Instead of zero. No, the coolest thing was when we first started CAF, the impression was that everything you saw on television when it came to a charity was, you know, you had the violin music and the poor person and tears. And when we did our first photo shoot with Tim Antuani, with Rudy, the photo was him standing in front of that Ingram Bridge.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Arms folded.
Yeah.
Had the guns
RoboCop,
out.
Guns out.
Yeah,
with the RoboCop legs.
Yeah.
And the attitude was, this is, I'm here to kick your ass.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I'm not here for your sympathy.
Mm-mm.
You give me an opportunity. You give me a piece of equipment.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show you what I'm going to do with it.
Yeah.
And you better get the hell out of my way because I'm coming.
Yeah. And then that's what it really is. When somebody comes to us and sympathizes, it's almost like you're insulting my intelligence. Like, right. like you're trying to like sugarcoat it. And I can still see you with my two eyes that work. And my two ears that still work. And a functional brain that you're trying to sugarcoat it. And,
right.
and I feel like it's like you're insulting my intelligence.
Yeah.
So my whole mission and really saying my whole life is do not treat me any different. That's the worst you can do, even to the fact people look and say, well, do you want to take the elevator? Would you have taken the elevator? You know, like, I'm
we talk about this all the time, but we actually look back. We look back at our high school and middle school and elementary bullies who would make fun of us and would treat us the same.
You guys all had that.
We look back, but we can only thank them.
We thank our bullies.
They made you tougher.
They made it tougher because they singled us out. They made it known that we were weak individuals and we better do something about it. And I thank them for not treating me any different. You know, instead of sympathizing me like you made, you know, my high school hell, but it made me a stronger person.
Got you to London.
You were
in London while that guy's working a Jack in the Box at home, right? Rudy, were you able to get a hold of Ruben?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so maybe we'll take a break.
Okay.
And we'll get Ruben on after the break. Again, we're in studio with Rudy Garcia Tolson, Roderick Sewell, and Blake Leeper. This is our Independence Weekend special. Hold on, everybody. Oh, and actually, we're brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, the Challenge Athlete Foundation. Check out any of our interviews on BabbittVille.com and iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back. Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, Catalina Eco Marathon coming up in November, Challenged Athletes Foundation, and check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com and on iTunes. In studio, Roderick Sewell, Blake Leeper, Rudy Garcia Tolson, Paralympic and Olympic hopefuls. And, gentlemen, the other day, you drove up to Long Beach to meet a young man named Ruben Marin.
Yes.
And Ruben, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here still.
Hey, Ruben, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. And you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks so much for taking time. So, Ruben, tell me a little bit about what happened. You, it was a drive-by shooting?
Yeah, I was involved in a drive-by shooting, and I ended up having my leg amputated. Yeah.
So after that happens, what did you, and this was right after your 17th birthday.
Yeah, right after, on the 6th. Yeah, June 1st, my birthday, yeah.
So this just happened. We're talking just like a month ago.
Yeah, a month ago, yeah.
So after you lost your leg, what did you know about, had you met amputees before? Did you have any idea what was possible for you?
No, actually, man, I really didn't know what I was going to do. And I have a close friend, and it happened to be Rudy's cousin. And she told me about him, and I was like, yeah, man, it's cool. And she said, hey, not to get in touch with him, and it'll be good for you. I was like, yeah. And so I met Rudy, and it was the first amputee that I met.
And so you were an athlete before you were injured. What baseball was your sport?
Yeah, I played baseball, yeah.
So, and I'm sure after you lose your leg, you're going, oh, my God, I don't even know if I can be an athlete again. How important was it for you to meet Rudy and eventually Roderick and Blake as well?
Yeah, it was important because they know how it is to have an amputated leg, and I didn't. So I was confused until I met Rudy. You know, he gave me, motivation. He told me how it was going to be like. And I kind of got a feeling of it. And so as it was going on, I met Blake and I met Roderick, and they were just telling me stories and stories, you know, how they did and what they did. And it was big. I mean, they've gone far.
Well, and the nice thing is there's so many opportunities. I mean, Blake was in the Paralympics and, you know, in front of 85,000 people and a worldwide audience, and Rudy's won gold medals in Athens and Beijing and silver medal in London, and Roderick's done nothing.
Oh, man.
Got him.
Oh, my God.
I see that one.
I was waiting on it.
Ruben needs... Ruben knows we like to have fun. He can tell. He can tell.
Yeah.
So wait, these guys took you to Hooters and got you a PS4.
Yeah, they got me a PlayStation 4, and they told me you need to chill back at the house, you know, get this healed. And I was, sure enough, right now I'm playing MLB.
So you better be practicing, boy. You better be practicing, man. I'm coming for you. I'm telling you.
I love that. Yeah. So now you've got people to bounce things off of. You've got, you know, these three guys, the three amigos, are guys that you can call any time, right, to give you input. Talk now that, didn't you go out and watch Rudy at a triathlon last week too?
We went to the triathlon and we did the 5K.
Ruben actually pushed the 5K in his hospital wheelchair.
No way.
Yeah, the whole way.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did it. I told Rudy I was going to do it. So I did it.
Man of his word.
Hey, Ruben, you're crazy, man.
That's crazy.
You're crazy. You know that, right?
In your hospital chair. Wow.
Yeah, I had my brother help me a little bit, but when we got downhill, I was like, you can take it from here.
Hey, your mom and dad and your whole family did it too, no?
Yeah, my cousins went, my aunt went. Yeah, it was nice.
So what did you think about triathlons?
I seen a lot of people that had the same condition and, you know, other things wrong with them, and they're doing it. So it inspired me, and I met a couple people over there, so it was pretty cool. Yeah.
So, Ruben, you're in Long Beach?
No, I'm in Harvard City.
Oh, okay. And so what is the prognosis in terms of when will you get a walking around leg?
Right now it's hard to say because I haven't even been in therapy yet. Okay. Right now they're trying to figure out what therapy I'm going to go to. Either it's in San Pedro or in Los Alamitos. So I got a few doctor appointments this week, so hopefully they'll tell me which one I'm going to have to go to. So
Rudy's a swimmer and long jumper and runner. Roderick's a swimmer. Blake is his track guy. You saw a triathlon. You've been exposed to a lot of sports over a short period of time. Is baseball something you want to get back to? Are you thinking maybe some of these endurance sports?
Yeah, I want to get back to it real bad. I'm even playing catch outside with my friends. I have them come over. Ben, hey, put on this glove. We're playing catch.
I love that.
We're playing catch.
You know, one of the things we talk about all the time with Challenged Athletes Foundation is how important it is to get people back in the sport as quickly as possible so that you can avoid a lot of that depression. You know, how important do you think that's going to be for you?
I mean, it's going to be a lot because, before I had this video game, I'll be in the house, I'll be frustrated. I have to go outside and do these programs. They're going to be keeping me outside all the time doing advanced, all that, so it's going to be good.
The other thing that was interesting, I was interviewing a guy the other day who was an age group triathlon guy, done like 175 races, and then he got injured, became, you know, paraplegic. And he was saying that so much of the way the family reacts is dependent on how you react, right? So if Ruben's attitude is good and Ruben is, hey, I want to go do triathlon, I want to play baseball, I want to play catch, the family takes its cue from you. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, I mean, they want me to do a lot after I get back up on my leg and I get a new one. They want me to join all kinds of things. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, I got to see how it is when I first get back on my leg. Yeah, I mean, they're up to it.
Love it. So, Blake, what impressed you about Ruben?
Yeah, you know, I can remember when I was talking to Ruby, me and Roderick was, and I was talking about my medals, and I put my blades on it.
You know,
and showed him how I used them, how they connected, how fast I could go with them. You know, when I do that to most people, the first thing they say is like, wow, you know, that's amazing. How do you do that? I don't understand. But when I showed it to Ruben, he just shook his head and said, man, I want to do that. You know, and it's crazy. That's the first thing I said when I seen Austin run. I need to do that. I want to do that. And then that's one thing, you know, in the situation he's going through, when you're going through a lot in your life, you got two choices. And that's it. Either this is going to make me or this is going to break me. And I can tell it's not only in his eyes, but in his heart that this, a situation like this, he has the mindset, this is going to make him. This is going to make him a superstar.
Yeah. You know what, Ruben, what's interesting is Blake, what Blake says is exactly right. Making somebody or breaking somebody and understanding that you have you can look at it as an opportunity. You know, I mean, like those guys talked about before in the interview, life isn't fair.
Yeah.
Stuff happens. Yeah. Good stuff happens. Bad stuff happens to good people. We can tell that you're a great young man just from your voice over the phone. And these guys will be here for you. Challenged Athletes Foundation will be here for you because we want you to, you know, you get in the sport. This maybe 2016 is a little early, but 2020 you'll be like 21 years old to go to the 2020 Paralympics in Japan.
He's actually my competition.
Yeah.
So
is he really?
I'm watching you, Ruben. Don't worry.
Wait, so he's going to be in your division?
Yeah. We would race each other
because he's records. a single above.
Yep.
So what records is he going to be breaking?
I don't know. It depends on what he's going to want to be doing.
Do you want Ruben? Are you a swimmer?
No, I'm not a good swimmer, but I can run.
He's coming
to the dark side. Roderick, what impressed you about Ruben?
I like the fact that, like I said earlier, as soon as we came through the door,
Yes.
Ruben was welcoming, and he wasn't like, he didn't seem like he was depressed anymore. He seemed like more interested and willing to learn about what he's got coming for him, basically, you know?
Opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
What's out there.
Exactly. And just seeing the fact that he was just ready to go. Like, we're like, man, slow down. That's why we got you the PS4. You know? Chill in the house, just play around, play the games a little bit, and just heal up. And then worry about getting on the track and doing whatever you want to do later.
And the family aspect of it, mom and dad. I mean, there's so much unknown. Don't you find that, Ruben? There's so much unknown. I mean, you don't know, and they don't know either.
Yeah.
So it's the education process that you three could provide for the family in terms of what support Ruben needs.
Like we were saying earlier, our families have been the biggest part of why we are the way we are today. And we told Ruben's family the same thing. You know, we said, you guys are going to be the people that help Ruben get to where he needs to get. You know, he can't do it on his own. You know, as strong as he is, he's a strong boy. But his family's going to have to be the ones there for him.
I love it.
Yeah.
Hey, Ruben, I'm glad you're part of our world. And we're going to hopefully we'll get you down here for San Diego Triathlon Challenge coming up in October so you can get to meet a lot of other guys.
Definitely.
That'll be cool,
Because the key is meeting a lot of folks,
That's right?
That's all you can
do. Yeah. Getting as much information as you can, you know, telling your story and sharing your story.
Yes.
And then once you manifest that out into the world, it can you have no clue who it can help. You have no clue.
Yeah. And the whole idea is that sport changes lives for the better. Ruben, thanks for coming on, and let's stay in touch so we can have you on again as you figure out what sport you want to do, and get your running leg, your C sprint or whatever that is.
He beats Rudy.
What do you
and Roderick.
What do you take?
We're having one.
And yes. Roderick and Blake. And I think we have all three of these.
I think we should have, yeah.
Yeah, I think you all three. Hey, Ruben, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, man, thanks. Thanks
for having me. Ruben, hang tight. We'll be talking to you soon. Enjoy that video game.
Practice.
All right, Rudy, I'm about to be San Diego right now.
There he goes.
And he begins.
We'll talk to you soon, Ruben.
Good one.
All right, buddy. Ruben Marin has been our guest. Hey, guys, I want to thank you three for coming in. I know what Roderick and Rudy, you got swim practice tomorrow?
Yes,
we do.
7:30 a.m.
7:30 a.m. And now, what do you guys swim in a week? How much mileage?
We swim at least 2 to 3 at practice.
I'd say anywhere from 20 to 30 grand a week. I'd say
30 to 20, 30 grand a week. Yeah. And what are you running?
Probably putting in probably about 2-3 miles a day. Then after recovery day, so looking at about 15.
And then all three are doing weights.
Yeah, three times a week, twice a day.
I don't need to do as much as these guys
because
you got the gun show going.
This guy right here,
I'm the youngest, but I'm also the biggest. Out, right?
Yes, he actually rubs baby oil when he on his
No, I don't.
I was at that swim meet last week and he was rubbing oil.
It was lotion. You can't be black swimmers and not have lotion.
Cocoa butter. It was cocoa butter, Bob.
He was glistening. I love it. Hey, boys, thank you so much for coming in studio.
Thank you, Bob.
Our guests have been Rudy Garcia Tolson, who is going for his third Paralympic gold, right?
We're going for,
for a Paralympic gold.
Forget about that silver medal, Rudy.
But the other ones really don't count. And Blake, who's going for his first
gold.
I gotta watch out for gold.
And Roderick, who's going for his first gold as well.
Yes, sir.
Love that.
Golden Rio.
It's the plan. Golden Rio.
We got three athletes, no legs, one goal.
Yes.
Love that.
And
of course, our main man here, Blake, going for the Olympic team as well.
First disabled American with a double.
We're going to do it.
Yeah, and when you make that team, then all hell will break loose.
Yes, and then you're going to have to come back in here and have a talk.
Talk about the huge advantage.
The haters. Yes, the haters.
All the haters. We love the haters.
We love them all.
Oh, my goodness. We, again, are brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, the Challenged Athletes Foundation, where we have raised over $65 million to keep athletes like these three in a game of life through sport. And you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. The boys are singing. The boys are dancing.
Yeah.
Hold on, everybody. We will be right back.